Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of All My Best Friends Are Digital. The world may be terrible, but we still have games. Caitlin, how you doing?
I still have games. Woo!
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. I am Mark. We're going to be talking about video games. We're going to be talking about what we've been playing lately. We're going to be talking about retro games in our gaming opinions on old school funware, aka Goof, where we're going to be talking about Chrono Trigger, and I will have yet another opportunity to encounter an all-time classic and be unimpressed. Let's see if I take up that opportunity. Then our feature game is going to be Call of Juarez Gunslinger. And then finally, we're going to be shouting out some upcoming titles that spark some enthusiasm in our cold, jaded hearts. So, Caitlin, what have you been up to lately?
Okay, so I played some Split Fiction and actually finished it. It was wonderful. And I played some more Monster Hunter Wilds. You know, I've just been working on my endgame set. That's not what I want to talk about today. Today, I want to talk about Lego. Not Lego video games, but Lego sets designed based on a video game. Because the thing that I did this last week that took up much more time than any of the gaming that I did is I built my Lego Mario NES set. So it was 2,600 pieces. So it's like twice as large as any set that I've ever put together before. But it was such a joy, like, building out the whole, like, you know, Nintendo Entertainment System and the controller, and it was just, my heart was just so happy.
So I have a number of friends who are deep into Lego.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Lego TM brand building blocks. And they've been telling me about a related Mario set, which is kind of this weird app-driven interactive thing where you go and you tap Mario on something and then your phone tells you something. But you're talking about the actual NES set, where you build an NES out of Lego blocks, yes?
Yes. The things that you build from this set are you build a actual NES. I mean, not a working NES. That would be cool. But
sure,
you build
sure.
an NES. You build the original Mario game cartridge, a controller, a TV, and then the TV has a little crank on the side. It's like one of those old school, like, TVs, you know, with the clicky channel dial on the front and everything. But anyway, there's a little crank on the right side, and if you rotate it, then it actually, like, there's a little scene for Mario that you built, and he kind of moves through the scene, like, hopping over blocks and stuff. It's adorable.
What scale is it? How big is the finished product?
So the TV, I want to say, is, I don't know, like, maybe I'm going to use freedom units here, but like a foot wide, and it's not quite square, but, you know, something like that. And the Lego NES is just a little bit smaller than a real NES. So it's a decent size.
I have a couple of questions that may sound pointed. Rest assured that, like all things in All My Best Friends Are Digital, this is rendered in a spirit of inquiry and a genuine feeling of love and respect. All right. Number one, you have the original hardware. So
yeah.
Why would you recreate the hardware in less functional form?
For me, Lego is a really nice relaxing activity for my brain. And it activates the same happiness centers in my brain as doing jigsaw puzzles does. Although jigsaw puzzles are significantly cheaper and I don't mind taking them apart after I'm done. I'm not going to take my Lego apart. It just, you know. But, and it gives you, like, kind of this feeling of being, quote, creative. But you're not actually being creative, but you're building something. And that's sure. Kind of nice. Yeah, and it's just a really nice break after, like, programming at work all day to just, you know, kind of switch it off and follow some instructions and build something that looks cool.
Wait a minute. Wait, you have a job other than this one?
I know, it's terrible.
Oh. Did you build this alone or with anyone else?
I built this one alone in the past. So I I have a few others. I bought a Bowser train because I thought it was funny because my husband likes 18XX board games. So I bought a Bowser train and we put the Bowser train together. Together.
Like many train gamers, though, your husband doesn't actually care about trains.
Yes. Yes, that's the running joke, is that he loves trains, even though he really, like, I don't know, he probably thinks trains are a little cool, but he doesn't like trains that much. And then I've built some of the Animal Crossing sets with my daughter.
You also have an unbuilt tall neck from Not Horizon anymore. Zero Dawn, yes? Oh, I you built the tall too. Neck.
I did. I finally did
oh,
it.
Oh, cool.
So,
cool, cool, yeah. Cool. Excellent. I have a second question, though, and this is the second question that may be perceived as somewhat pejorative. I get the appeal of the crank-driven television. That seems really cool.
Yeah.
Is there any mechanical gimmick to the actual console itself? Like, can you put the Super Mario cartridge in? Does it do the little spring-loaded thing that the NES cartridges do?
Okay, you can put the cartridge in. There isn't a spring-loaded thing, although I've found myself wondering if I did it correctly because it kind of feels like there should be something kind of spring-loaded. So I don't know if I did it right. But you can, like, open the front and put the game cartridge in, and the controller also, like, quote-unquote, plugs in. Like, it has a little hook that you can put it on. So it's cute, but it's not, like, it's functional, obviously.
Because I'll admit that I'm not the target audience for LEGO. I never have been. I probably never will be.
Yeah.
But when I see the NES set, it's, again, other than the crank-operated television, which I'm sure is very intricate, it's a rectangle that attaches to a smaller rectangle.
Yep.
And I have difficulty fathoming how that build is going to get interesting unless they deliberately complicate things. What am I missing?
Yeah, you don't just build a hollow rectangle. There is stuff inside. I don't know if the interior... Okay. So this is one of the things that I don't really know about, like, LEGO set designing, obviously. But it feels that there are certainly parts that are there solely to support something else that needs to happen in there. Like, for example, that little area where you can put the cartridge, there is a piece that can move up and down. It's just not spring-loaded. Again, maybe my mistake. There's other stuff that you build, and it seems kind of intricate, and it's like, this probably could have been just one, like, tall and thick block. Like, it didn't have to be a whole bunch of little blocks. So, I don't know. Some of that might just be making it more fun, or maybe they were trying to replicate some aspects of the interior of the NES, even though you will never see it because it is all enclosed. I don't know. I fully understand that question, and I don't think I have a satisfactory answer.
Because a number of people in my acquaintance, who again are super enthusiastic about LEGO, have sent me links at various times to, like, the LEGO Optimus Prime, and be like, doesn't that look cool? I'm like, no, I have an Optimus Prime. Actually, he's much better proportioned, and he transforms better than that one. He's also half the cost. And then they're like, you just don't get it. And they look at me like I have no joy in life. I have lots of joy in life. Just none of it involves assembling Lego, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I didn't really get Lego for a long time. It's only recently that I kind of got into it. I bought the tall neck one because I thought it looked cool. But then I got, you know, the Animal Crossing ones because, like, oh my God, it's cute. There's little Animal Crossing characters. But I thought I thought that was it for me until the NES set came out. And then, you know, I do need to back off from them, I think, because there's only so much room in my house. You know, I don't know where all these things will go if I keep buying more. but it was fun while it lasted.
And if you buy too many Lego sets, you'll be in debt to a mercenary raccoon.
Yes, we wouldn't want that.
Well, I'm glad you're having a good time with it, but as you say, this may be the end of Lego for about now.
But yeah, I have one more Animal Crossing set that I'll put together with my daughter, and then, you know, maybe I'll stop looking at the Lego website.
Are the Animal Crossing sets to scale with the Tall Neck? Can the Tall Neck just frolic amongst the Animal Crossing buildings?
I suppose they technically might be to scale, just because the Tall Neck is quite tall and the Animal Crossing stuff is pretty small.
Yeah. I mean, I assume the NES console is not to scale with anything else. That would be rather ridiculous.
That would be adorable. Oh my god, just, you know, one tiny little NES block.
I'm glad you've been having a good time with your Lego. That sounds great.
Yes, it's been very fun and still technically video game related.
That's fine. This is your show, Caitlin. You can talk about whatever you like.
All right. What have you been playing lately, Mark?
I have been playing Lone Star. So Lone Star is a game that was on Early Access, and I was tracking it while it was on Early Access, and version 1.0 came out this year, and I promptly bought it. It is another roguelite deck builder, and it is about building ships. And I do love building starships. Building spaceships and going pew-pew is one of my great joys in life. And I talked recently about how I've been, you know, trying to find satisfying spaceship games. And other than Star Fox 64, which I found surprisingly enjoyable, I haven't been having a whole lot of luck. And I confess, I feel a little bit cold with respect to Lone Star. In part, I think, because of expectations. Mm-hmm. In part, the fault is theirs. They compare it to FTL. And if you're going to compare yourself to FTL, you had best come correct. I think comparing Lone Star to FTL is true insofar as they both involve space and spaceships and a vague roguelite structure, but past that, they are nothing alike. And I have also come off a game that I played a lot of last year called Cobalt Core, mm-hmm. which is also about ship-to-ship combat and is a deck builder. The difference is that, for one thing, Cobalt Core has much better characterization and much, much better writing and much better world-building. In point of fact, I was shocked when I finished Cobalt Core. The ending actually brought a little tear to my jaded eye. It socked me right in the feels, Caitlin. I was not expecting anything like this. It had made me chuckle a number of times.
Yeah.
And I had been vaguely curious about some of the plot elements, but I was not expecting to get socked right in the feels by the ending of Cobalt Core. Lone Star has a radically different approach to ship-based combat deck building, and mostly I think it's for the worse.
Okay.
For one thing, the cards, and I think I can say this without fear of contradiction, are all boring. The cards are just a number from 1 to 9 and a color. That's it. And all you're doing is you're slotting in these number cards into various modules that you've already set into your ship. The early fights, as you imagine, get very simple, but the later fights are still just about feeding the right numbers into the modules that you've already put into your ship. And as you might imagine, it's a roguelite, so you go and purchase modules or find modules or sell modules or upgrade modules and do all these things with modules. In the meta progression, there are more modules that get unlocked into the supply, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're feeding the same numbers into these modules. And so I get a vaguely Balatro type feeling in terms of the actual execution. And I don't mean this as a positive, because
I was going to say, is that derogatory?
it is and it isn't. I mean, Balatro works, but one of the things that I don't like about Balatro is that at a certain point, the game functions because the math is outside your calculation.
Sure.
If you could actually calculate the numbers accurately, if you had a better sense of how the numbers worked, then Balatro wouldn't be as enjoyable as it is. Whereas in Lone Star, I frequently find myself unable to parse all the modifiers in an unsatisfying way, because a marginal difference of 1 or 2 can make all the difference in terms of whether or not I'm going to succeed in a given fight. And I can't really tell, and I don't really care, whether or not the game expects me to have a full certainty about what the consequences of all my number inputs are going to be. Because I can definitely tell you, I'm not interested in engaging in the level of math and foreknowledge necessary to come to a perfect calculation about what those inputs are going to be. So what you're left with is this level of uncertainty based on the complication of number interactions, but not in a universe or a set of play dynamics that I find as interesting as Balatro. And I don't find the stuff that you're building to be as interesting. Again, partially because half of the universe, namely your cards, the deck, is just so boring. Again, they're just numbers. Whereas in Cobalt Core, in Bellatro, in a lot of other deck builders of this ilk, you get interesting cards. Nifty cards that do various things. That let you exploit new avenues of movement. That interact and combine with the non-deck elements of your build in ways that really make you feel like you've exploited the system and explored new gameplay elements. And Lone Star doesn't really get me there. On top of that, I don't find the setting particularly compelling either. I've gotten to the point now that I never reached in Cobalt Core, never did in FTL, and almost never do in other roguelites of its ilk. I'm skipping all the flavor text. You know, you encounter a ship, it gives a little semi-humorous blurb about what the pilot of the ship is. I'm like, next. The runs are already long enough. A successful run, when skipping the flavor text for me, is about 45 minutes long. And again, I don't like it when roguelites have runs that long, but to a certain extent, sometimes it's a price you have to pay, so I'm not going to fault it too much. But as I say, I just don't find it sufficiently engaging that I feel the need to read it. I've enjoyed it, though. It's okay. But ultimately, the way that it chooses to allocate things like movements and energy and how your weapons work, I just prefer the way other deck builders do it. Again, like Bellatro, like Cobalt Core, like some of those other ones. And Lone Star is just not as appealing by virtue of the universe of effects and how the fundamental gameplay elements work. Unlike Bellatro, I think that Lone Star could work as an analog game. Especially after seeing the success of the Slay the Spire board game. I could imagine that Lone Star would work in an actual physical version. I'm not saying it would. It's a sufficiently niche release. Whereas a game like Bellatro or Cobalt Core never could. I don't think they'd ever really work at all. So whether that's a plus or a minus, I don't know. As I say, Lone Star's okay, but I come away a little bit disappointed, especially after some of my more positive science fiction experiences lately, and because I really do like ship-to-ship combat.
So if the deck is uninteresting, what part is interesting?
Building your ship and acquiring new toys for your ship. So there are two aspects of your ship. You have treasures, which are just various buffs, like every other turn, draw an extra card. Or when X, Y, and Z happens, you get a buff to various modules. And then there are the modules of your actual ship. You start with incredibly dull modules, like, for example, a module with two slots, which means you can feed it up to two cards. And each card just contributes its value to the weapon power that it's going to fire in that lane. And then you get more complicated ones, more interesting ones. Like, for example, a starting module that's pretty common. It's loaded into the middle of your ship. If you load two numbers that are the same, then you get a bonus to your shot. So if you load a 3 and 3, the shot value isn't 6, the shot value is 8.
I see.
And then you can upgrade that module. And then the bonus isn't 2, the bonus is 4. So 3 and 3 isn't 8 anymore. 3 and 3 is 10. And then you start to get... that starts interacting with treasures, and maybe there's a module that's a little more complicated, a module that says when you load something here, you know, the square of the inverse of the root of the whatever to the power of something or other gets added to the power of the module in front of it and behind it, you know, stuff like that. And that's the part where I stop being able to calculate the specific ones. You know, again, early fights, very simple. Oh, I'm being hit with 4 there. I'll load a 4 into that gun, and they'll cancel each other out. Okay, we're good.
Yeah.
But once things start getting more complicated, they start getting more interesting, but also less determinative as far as I'm concerned in terms of my ability to calculate it. Again, I don't know if that's intentional or not. I don't know if I'm just too stupid or too impatient or if that's how the game wants it to be. I just know that the level of math required to get to the point of calculating everything is beyond what I want to devote to a video game.
Yeah.
So I have to assume it was deliberate or at least partially deliberate. And ultimately, I found that the ceiling of interest kicked in relatively early as a consequence.
Yeah, I mean, I can see there's some games you get into them and you're like, all right, I know that I'm going to have to do some math today. And maybe you'll approach that a little bit more differently. But especially with the numbers starting out pretty straightforward and then eventually just getting to the point where it's like, you know, I don't really feel like breaking out my graphing calculator today. So I guess I'm just going to YOLO it, like. I understand why that would be frustrating.
Have you played Cobalt Core?
I have not yet, although I would love to soon.
I highly recommend it. It's really good. Yeah, so that's Lone Star. Couple of interesting things, but overall, didn't hold my interest. I'm probably just about done with it. A little bit sad.
Yeah. There will be another sci-fi roguelike out there for you somewhere.
Well, there might even be a sci-fi game that we're going to talk about very soon.
Alrighty.
That was a hint to introduce the next segment, Caitlin.
Yep. Okay.
It was subtle. It was really subtle. Yep, I can't blame you for missing it.
Moving on, we are going to move on to our retro segment, gaming opinions on old school funware, aka Goof, where we are going to play one of my favorite games ever, Chrono Trigger. And Mark probably hates it, but we'll see what happens.
Okay. Can we just address that, please?
Yes.
That little snide, very subtle remark. So, a number of people, you, Tech Dweeb, my mother, have now accused me of either deliberately or just reflexively being some kind of knee-jerk, contrarian, iconoclast, oh, it's too popular, there's too much hype, or even in the slightly less damning version, my expectations were too high, or I expected it to be something else, right? And to a certain extent, sort of a meta comment about all my best friends are digital, one of the reasons why I'm super enthusiastic about this podcast, above and beyond being able to talk with all you great people and with Caitlin especially, is because it's kind of a structure so as to encourage me to go and play all those classics that I've been hearing about for years that I never did.
Yeah.
Which led me to things like, you know, Undertale and Red Dead Redemption 2. But I confess, I too started wondering whether or not I was just going to dislike all of these all-time classics.
Yeah.
It was all just going to be another Ocarina of Time, another Undertale. Just like, okay, I guess I can see why. Actually, I still have difficulties with Undertale, but mostly I guess I can see why people like it, but it's just not for me. Eh? So yeah, fair enough. That's the background of Chrono Trigger. You were saying.
I wanted to kind of open this with saying that, or, you know, other than saying Mark hates everything, open it by saying that this...
How dare you?
I know you don't. You liked Valkyrie Profile, that...
I loved Valkyrie Profile, and I remember liking other things.
I'm sorry. I'm laying it on a little too thick. But this was a week of major technical issues for me, even with Chrono Trigger, which was very annoying, because I was playing on Steam. I owned it on Steam, so I decided to play it there. It wouldn't work with my controller, and in fact, my controller was just doing the up input forever.
Huh,
so
wild.
If you also decide to play Chrono Trigger one day, listeners, and you're having issues, you can go into the controller settings on Steam and enable Steam input for Chrono Trigger for your controller, and it should fix it. Thankfully, my issues weren't as bad as with Call of Juarez Gunslinger, but that is where we opened with Chrono Trigger, which was a little bit of a bummer.
I'm actually surprised you didn't play it on original hardware.
Okay, so I don't actually know where my copy of Chrono Trigger is.
Okay, so you have one. Its little battery backup has probably given up the ghost by now.
Probably, yeah.
30 years on.
It's in a box somewhere.
It's in a box.
So I played on Steam. After sure. I figured out my controller issues, and I just dove right in to my love and adoration for Chrono Trigger, and I accidentally stayed up till 1 a.m. playing it.
So this came out in 1995. This is the so-called Dream Team. So Mironobu Sakaguchi and Yuji Horii, who are longtime RPG developers, as well as Akira Toriyama, who did all the character designs for this, as well as all the Dragon Ball stuff and a whole bunch of Dragon Quest stuff. Just before we get on to talking about Chrono Trigger itself, what is your opinion on the Akira Toriyama style?
So Chrono Trigger was actually my first introduction to his art, and I liked it. I was my friend Jared and I would draw these characters in that style a whole lot, you know, that whole year that when we first were introduced to Chrono Trigger. But I was introduced to Dragon Ball after, and I don't know, the style has worn on me a bit. It's not my favorite, but I don't mind it too much in Chrono Trigger because it's like, you know, it's in your character portraits, just their faces, and in like the intro animation cutscene, and I think that's about it. So I don't mind it.
The intro animation cutscenes do not exist in the Super Nintendo version. I played the Super Nintendo version. I was briefly considering trying the DS version, which has those intros and a couple of quality of life improvements, like, for example, Always Run, which I would very much like.
Yes.
Decided against it, partially because one of my misgivings about Chrono Trigger is I really dislike the Akira Toriyama art style.
Mm-hmm.
There are two pieces of media which men of roughly my age, other people as well, but especially men of roughly my age, are expected to get really into and have strong feelings about. One of them is Dragon Ball Z.
Yes.
I've never liked Dragon Ball Z. I found it tedious and overall just silly, and not in an amusing silly way, in a way that I just can't take any of it seriously at all.
You don't want to spend 3 episodes powering up to do one big move?
Caitlin, they can all teleport. The idea of a slow-moving, huge ball of energy being deadly to these individuals who can all teleport is facially risible. Anyway, but I agree with you, the art style of Akira Toriyama is only pronounced, really, in the character portraits, which I don't like, but the actual in-game graphics. This is kind of like the reverse of the Final Fantasy VII problem, where some of the time they looked awesome, and the rest of the time they looked goofy. Here it's the other way around. Most of the time they look great, and then only sometimes when you look at the character portraits do you really get that strong Toriyama twist on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, I wanted to have a brief discussion about the art of Akira Toriyama first, because again, every time I read about Chrono Trigger, it's like, oh yeah, Akira Toriyama. It's like, oh yeah, I don't like that. Next.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the foreheads are just, they're huge.
Yeah.
There's so much space.
There's a lot of forehead. And you know, it's a JRPG with a silent protagonist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all those things, you know, reasons I had for suspecting that it wasn't going to be my jam.
Well, what did you end up thinking of it, Mark?
I absolutely adore Chrono Trigger.
Okay.
It is so good. It is so good.
I feel bad for giving you crap now.
Well, honestly, I find this very validating because, you know, I too was starting to wonder, like, I try to be pretty, in all sincerity, I try to be pretty rigorous about my opinions just generally. Yeah. Like, I don't want to make, I have a lot of reflexive opinions, but on those opinions that I'm going to be talking about, I'd like to have some basis for believing that they're at least consistent or genuinely arrived at and not some sort of reactive or reactionary position.
Sure.
And so I had a certain degree of trepidation loading up Chrono Trigger. The first thing that really grabbed me about Chrono Trigger is that, and so far this has been true with one exception, the plot just makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. Everything is grounded, every step along the way is perfectly reasonable, and at no point am I informed that some nameless ancient evil has come and I'm the chosen one. And so some royal muckety-muck is telling me that I have to go do a thing, and I had forgotten how prevalent that is in JRPGs. I mean, even if you want to be uncharitable, that's kind of how it works in the Persona games, too. There's some giant world-threatening evil that manifests itself in a whole bunch of ways that aggress on somebody and you're just being reactive. Here, there's just a series of establishing events that occur that are plausible, that are connected to each other, and build up towards something consequential. And it's like, this is a good story. I like the story. And this also gives the characters, even though they're very, very simple, almost to the point of being simplistic, but they're nonetheless charming. They have a certain degree of appeal, and so I'm able to get, I have some degree of affection for them. And consequently, I found myself charmed almost against my will, even if I had any ill will towards Chrono Trigger. It's leading along in a great way, and it's just really visually well done.
Yeah.
It's shockingly good looking. For a 1995 Super Nintendo game, it doesn't employ any Mode 7 trickery. It's not using any scaling nonsense. There are no hardware gimmicks. It's just they are going to devote their efforts into making really compelling scenery, novel, albeit goofy looking, but in a good way, enemies, and reasonably solid character designs. And that's all great. The music doesn't work on me quite as much. I still prefer the Final Fantasy music to Chrono Trigger, even though it was done by the same people. But everything is just so slick and carefully thought out and smooth and wonderful and charming. It's delightful. It's the best kind of escapism. Chrono Trigger has completely sucked me in. I'm about 10 hours in, which I understand is roughly the halfway mark or so. And I'm definitely going to be finishing it. Like, I just, every day, I want to just bring Chrono a little bit closer to, I think I've been spoiled to something major that happens near the end.
Okay.
But I want to, I just want to get a little progress and see what happens.
Awesome. That makes me so happy. I really like how the story unfolds in Chrono Trigger. How, you know, it doesn't start with any big bad. You know, you're just going to a fair, you meet a girl, you hang out, and she accidentally gets sucked into a time portal. You know, these things happen. And, like, you go, you help her out, stuff happens. The actual main villain of the story doesn't show up for a few beats after that. And I just really like how it all unfolds, you know? It doesn't get too in your face about it. It feels natural.
Organic and natural, and evolves, and it lets build up the scope in a way that's utterly uncharacteristic of far too many, not even just JRPGs. American RPGs do the same problem.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the battle system is just novel enough. So I've been hearing for years people talk about the ATB, the active time battle system of Final Fantasy games and Chrono Trigger. And it's like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. It's basically just a turn-based thing. Okay. But here, my initial reaction to the battle system was negative, because it feels like you should be able to move your characters.
It does feel like that,
A battle starts, and your party members are distributed randomly to various parts of the screen. And, well, it feels random. It's preset. It's all scripted. People say there are no random encounters, and that's true. There are just these scripted encounters that come out of nowhere. Some of them you can avoid, some of them you can't.
Yeah.
And so your party members get distributed to various parts of the screen. The enemies get distributed to various parts of the screen. And then the strange thing is, the enemies start shimmying around. Or at least some of them do. Most of them do.
Yeah.
And a lot of your attacks, a lot of your special techniques, depend on where the enemies are. Are they clustered together? Are they in a line? Are they far away from each other? Etc. And so my impulse was that I had to be missing something. That I had to be able to move. Because Chrono, you can tell Chrono to go hit something way across the screen with a sword, and you'll see the absurd, almost comical image of Chrono running like crazy, sometimes in the opposite direction because that's the only way to get to the other side of the screen because there's no bridge or something.
Yeah.
Whacking it with a sword, and then he jumps back to where he used to be. So he like runs a marathon every time he does a melee attack. Because very early on, one of your characters, Luca, has a flame toss ability that hits everything in a line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fair enough, the game will tell you whether it's going to hit multiple things. I just initially felt it was going to feel awkward and stupid to not be able to control where anything was.
Yeah.
A little bit into it, I got used to it. And now it's more like I'm looking at the field and I'm feeling like I have to make a quick evaluation about whether or not the geography of the enemies leads to any exploits. If yes, do it. If not, don't.
Yeah.
And the time pressure makes that kind of compelling. So for the first time, I feel like the active time battle system is a feature rather than just a buzzword. And sometimes I get to have a little bit of tactical evaluation in my JRPG turn-based combat. So all told, the combat system is another surprise win.
Yeah, I rather liked that there were also a handful of enemies, for example, where you didn't want to attack them at certain points, and therefore you don't have to. You can just wait. And that feels really good when you realize that you can just wait. You don't have to just attack and waste a turn like you would in some of the other turn-based games.
And to a certain extent, I'm burying the lead. The best part about the battle system, as far as I'm concerned, no grinding.
Yes.
I've been told for years, one of the things that I've been told by well-meaning people who tried to get me to try Chrono Trigger sooner, because playing Chrono Trigger is just one of those rites of passage when you enter the emulation scene. Oh, did you play Chrono Trigger back in the day? No, go play Chrono Trigger. Never did. But a couple of things that you're told is, number one, it's not quite as long as a lot of other JRPGs. It's more like 20 to 25 hours rather than like 40 to 60. And number two is that you don't need to grind. One of the reasons why I never took that seriously is people who like playing JRPGs sometimes have a weird notion about what constitutes grinding.
Right. <There's a> certain... they don't know what it is.
Yeah. There's a certain mindset, Caitlin, that I would like to call the level 99 mindset.
Uh-huh.
I have never been burdened by this particular worldview, but some people are. And to those people, what the bar of what constitutes grinding is very strange. Having played Chrono Trigger, unless I'm going to hit some very strange wall later on, there's no grinding, which is great, because if I had to grind, it would be super painful, because again, there are no random encounters.
Yeah, you would actually have to like leave a map and then go back to it in order to, you know, for the enemies to reappear. Yeah, I really like in Chrono Trigger how you can, like, there are a number of encounters that you can skip, and so far, I haven't been punished for skipping things. I'm like, oh, I don't feel like fighting all those robots. I don't have to fight all those robots. I can go around them, and I haven't been punished yet. It's hard for me to actually remember what it was like playing back in the day, because I did New Game Plus so many times. Everybody was, you know, maxed out. I have no memories whatsoever of not needing to grind, because I played the game so many times. I basically grinded anyway. you're much further than I am in this playthrough, but I'm really glad to hear that you haven't had to have any grinding. I haven't done any, and it's been good.
It's been a while since I've played a JRPG where the only things that happen are the things that I want to have happen. Right?
Yeah.
Which is a harsh way of saying there's no grinding, but that's where we are. There's only one sour note that I've encountered while playing Chrono Trigger. And to a certain extent, that's a bit of a triumph. You know, usually I've got tons of nitpicks for... it's easy to find fault with any game, right?
Sure.
Aside from not being particularly enthusiastic about the music and not liking the character portraits, which are hardly great criticisms as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
There was this one sequence. It's this one thing that sticks out of my craw. There's this thing that happens in Chrono Trigger that happens in so many games. Not even just RPGs, but so many games. The main character is thrown in prison.
Yes.
It's actually well done. There's a whole trial. It's kind of interesting. It's well written.
Yeah.
There's this bit that made me feel half clever because, you know, I figured it out about how you're supposed to escape prison.
Mm-hmm.
You basically dodge around a guard and you... It's then that I realized that there was an important step that happens in all those other prison sequences that they skipped in Chrono Trigger. I'm supposed to believe that what they did was this kid got thrown into a prison cell with all his stuff.
Yes.
It's like... Hey, boy, you've got a sword longer than your torso, and you're in full armor. We'll just send you into prison that way and smack you around like you stole something.
Yeah.
Like, what? I needed to do a whole prison break thing, and then the guards will attack me, and I have all my stuff? Why didn't I just cut their heads off? This is
yeah.
It was just really weird. Every other game where you get thrown in prison, there's the box with all your stuff. You know the box I'm talking about. We all know that box.
We all know the box.
Nope, no box.
Yeah, so I did not recall, you know, how this exact sequence went down. So, you know, I hit the bars and I annoy the guards. The guard comes in and he hits me. I'm like, oh what a jerk. And then he's walking away from me slowly and I see this exclamation point over my head that indicates that I can do something. So I'm like, okay, I hit a button and I pull out my sword and I was like, whoa, you had this the whole time?
Yeah, in my experience, heavily armed and fully armored individuals don't consent to getting smacked around like that.
Yeah, what?
That and near the beginning of the game, I got trapped in an unwinnable death loop. So I had to restart, but I only lost a small amount of progress. It's just this weird thing where you can go into a random encounter, a scripted encounter with only one hit point and you can't access your menu and you don't have any healing items. So you just have to restart the game. But it's relatively early on, so it's hard to quibble too much. For a 30-year-old game, that's the only amount of jank that I've encountered, and so that's pretty good, all told.
Yeah, a part of me is a little sad that you're not into the music as much. I don't know, honestly, how much of the score I love because it, you know, makes, you know, nostalgia brain happy, or if it's because it's really good. But every piece in Chrono Trigger just... fills me with joy. That said, it is okay. You are obviously allowed to have your own opinion.
Wow.
But yeah, for me, the music is great. The graphics are great.
I show up here and I say, I love the thing. It's great. I'm fully compelled. You know, I prefer the music in Final Fantasy. And you're like, well, I guess not everyone can have good taste.
I did not. That's not exactly. Okay. I have no idea what I said because I don't remember already. But... I didn't mean it in a derogatory way. I meant to say that, you know.
All I remember is you trashing the music in Chrono Trigger, and then there's a red haze, and I woke up with blood on my hands. I don't know what happened.
Something
like
that.
The music's fine.
Yeah.
I think the music's fine.
Okay.
The music is the one area where I felt that kind of, I've been hearing for decades how amazing it is, and I just think it's okay. That's the one area where I felt like it had been oversold to me.
That's acceptable.
I'm glad I have your forgiveness, Caitlin.
Okay, good, good, good.
So that is Chrono Trigger. I am absolutely loving it. Thank you, everyone, over the years for having recommended it. Better late than never.
Yeah, and thank you to our patrons for voting on it.
Yeah, Caitlin put up a list of retro games for patrons to vote on what we would cover next. At the point where you're including Chrono Trigger on the list of things to vote for, at that point, I mean, I'm in favor of democracy and audience participation as the next guy, but it was a foregone conclusion before you'd even finished typing out the word Chrono Trigger.
Okay, I didn't think of it that way, but looking back on it...
It's fine.
I can understand.
It's fine. I'm glad it shook out this way.
Me too.
Thank you, patrons. Thank you, Caitlin. So... Let us now take a brief break to hear from our sponsors.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And we're back.
So now we're going to move on to our feature game, Call of Juarez Gunslinger. So there was a whole thing. It didn't work on my computer. I had to play in the Steam Deck. So some of my criticisms that I am about to say are going to be because I was forced to only experience Call of Juarez Gunslinger on my Steam Deck. I couldn't even plug in the keyboard and mouse because my mouse wouldn't work. I would move my mouse and I would spin in circles and stare at the ground. So I had so many technical problems that may not be anyone else's experience, but it was mine, unfortunately. So I'm just opening with that.
Well, it's hardly too surprising, frankly, because this is a title from 2013.
It is.
And often you find difficulties with PC ports because it's a PC port from 2013, even more so. And I'm one of those rare PC gamers that uses a controller for everything. Mm-hmm. I don't do mouse and keyboard unless it's just a point-and-click thing. So for first-person shooters, I'm very, very comfortable using a controller, so I didn't have any of those problems. I confess that it worked just fine, all told. Call of Juarez Gunslinger, not nearly to the same level of Chrono Trigger, but is one of those games that just has been highly recommended for a long time. But instead of, this is one of the all-time classics, is more of, hey, it's shockingly good and no one really talks about it. It's one of those underexplored digital download titles of the Xbox 360 era. So the Xbox 360, to a certain extent, this is just a minor historical digression, I think deserves some credit for the proliferation of indie games that we've seen over the course of the past 10 years, because they were doing some weird experimental stuff at the time.
Yeah.
They really made a push with the Xbox Live Arcade and a number of other things to have indie titles and smaller titles and these other strange little experimental downloadable bits, because Call of Juarez Gunslinger is not a full-fledged, you know, $60 or, you know, according to Nintendo now, $90 title that you were going to buy on a disc at Babbage's. I've now aged myself.
Oh, Babbage's, yes.
Yeah. So this was always a small download-only title. I bought it on Steam for like $3 when it was on sale, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It is in that context that it needs to be understood. So this is a first-person shooter, Western-themed. What's your experience with Westerns, Caitlin?
My entire experience with Westerns is Red Dead Redemption and Red Dead Redemption 2. That's it.
Okay.
Endless.
I alluded earlier that there were two bits of media that men of my age and general demographic breakdown are expected to be very enthusiastic about. One of them is Dragon Ball Z. The other is Tombstone. The movie Tombstone, people will not shut up about Tombstone. When the great Val Kilmer died recently, there were another flurry of articles effusively praising Tombstone. I hadn't seen Tombstone in like 10 years, and I remember not liking it. I figured, oh, I love Val Kilmer. Let's give it another shot. I don't like Tombstone.
Okay.
It's weird. I like some Westerns. I like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I like For a Few Dollars More. I don't like Unforgiven. It's weird. Some Westerns do it for me, and some Westerns don't. I react badly to how unrelentingly grimy and unpleasant so much of the Western aesthetic is. Mm-hmm. And some of that is represented in Call of Juarez Gunslinger intentionally. And some of that is represented in Kalafara's Gunslinger unintentionally. Like, and this is going to sound so petty, but it's absolutely true. I hated the main character's gloves, for example. And given that it's a first-person shooter, you see his hands a lot.
You do.
It's just ragged leather, roughly stitched together. It's just gross. I like being clean. I like being civilized. I'm not what I don't think I'm what you would call very prissy or picky.
Yeah.
But when I think of five layers in 100-degree heat and tuberculosis, I get a little ooked out. Not my scene.
Yeah. He does have a cute little bracelet, too. That's the thing I noticed.
I wouldn't necessarily say cute, but sure, I'm glad you found something aesthetically redeeming about the presentation of the main character. Because this, by and large, much like the revisionist westerns, so like a lot of even some of the original Sergio Leone stuff, but certainly a lot of the stuff in the late 20th, early 21st century, it acknowledges that the Western is a morally problematic framework. It's not like the romantic anti-hero, or at least it's not just the romantic anti-hero. There's a certain amount of romanticism around it. But a lot of it is about how these are violent men doing violent things, often for very poor reasons, and it represents them as such. So, with all your technical problems, Caitlin.
Yes.
And being forced to play it in a way you would otherwise not play a first-person shooter.
Yes.
Did you enjoy Kalafara's Gunslinger?
So, despite everything, I actually did. I really enjoyed the framing of the story with, you know, the main character, Silas, talking to some people who are, you know, asking him questions about his exploits. And he just starts telling stories. And you are playing through the stories while he narrates them. Every now and then a character might interject and ask a question. And sometimes, you know, the scene will pause while he's answering the question. At one point, you do something, and then Silas, the main character, is like, but that's not actually what happened, and it rewinds, and you play through it again, and I just, that always has, like, a little bit of charm for me that I just can't get enough of it. I love it.
It is really well done. It starts out as a bit of a gag, but I would actually break it up into three sections. So,
okay.
Call of Horror's Gunslinger is very short. I finished it in 5 hours. Which for $3 is pretty good. The first section, it's mostly a gag. Like, you're in a level, and there's no way out, and Silas says, and that's when I noticed the way to the caves. And then, like, in a comically exaggerated fashion, the world terraforms such that there's a path to the caves.
Yeah.
And then often one of the interlocutors will be like, sounds awfully convenient, Silas. Are you sure it went down that way? He's like, shut up, let me tell my story. Then there's a kind of a middle section, which is kind of about myth-making, where he, like, rags on the Earps and talks about how the Earps always had a bigger reputation than they deserved, and how Silas then starts claiming credit for killing every Western figure whose death was uncertain. Like, nobody knows who killed Johnny Ringo. Yeah, I killed Johnny Ringo. Nobody knows how Jesse James died. I killed Jesse James.
Yeah.
Everything. Everybody that can be claimed, he claimed. He's gonna, like, if the game had lasted longer, he would have claimed to have killed Biggie and Tupac. Then there's that last part where I don't want to spoil anything, but it actually gets substantially interesting and it becomes storytelling about storytelling. And the entire denouement, the entire conclusion of Kalafara's Gunslinger is about the power of stories, which really blindsided me because I wasn't expecting any, like, my expectations were super low going into Kalafara's Gunslinger. But my first surprise was really enjoying the gameplay and thinking that it got the pacing and the mechanics and everything else just about perfect. But then at the end, when it tied everything together, it was a little telegraphed. Like, I saw where it was going.
Yeah.
There were a couple of reveals that I saw coming. But I was impressed that it did it. Like, it had surprisingly good chops.
That's not bad for $3.
I assume you haven't played any of the other Call of Juarez games?
I have not. No. This was the first one. And, I mean, it looked neat. Actually, I didn't even realize it was kind of cel-shaded. I liked the graphics more than I thought I would, too.
Yeah, it holds up.
But, yeah, I haven't played any of the other ones.
Yeah, so there's Call of Juarez, Bound in Blood, and Cartel, but universally it is regarded that Gunslinger is the best of them.
Okay.
And it's also self-contained. It has no connection to any of the other games, aside from the fact that the first two, Call of Juarez and Bound in Blood, are roughly Western time period. Cartel is different. You know, I gotta say, sometimes, I talked about this a little bit in the context of Journey to the Savage Planet. Sometimes what you want is just a really cleverly executed, unambitious, self-contained thing that does what it does real well, gets in and gets out in a relatively constrained way. They're very different styles of games, but one of the reasons why I appreciated Gunslinger was in the same way that I appreciated Journey to the Savage Planet. It's like, oh, you know exactly what you're doing, and you're doing it really well, and you're not going to bloat past what is appropriate, and that is super satisfying.
Yeah, I did not play as much as I wanted to because it took forever to just get the game working, and then I couldn't play the way I wanted to. But what I did play, I thought that the talents that you get to learn as you level up, there weren't too many. They're pretty decent. I decided to pick, you know, to focus on the close range combat ones because I couldn't see anything on that tiny little Steam Deck thing.
So,
but it worked out quite well. I really enjoyed that there was that whole, you get this bar that fills up on the upper right of your screen that lets you dodge one death shot, basically. So I thought that was a neat little thing. If you're doing okay and you get yourself into a rough spot, you have one get out of death free card. The like bullet time was a lot shorter than I thought it would be. Probably, I don't know if it was too short. It was too short for me fumbling with the controller, for sure. Because sure. I'd be like, joystick, no, joystick, no, joystick. Okay, I shot a guy. Damn it, it's over.
There are skills that can make it last longer.
Okay.
And I did invest in those rather late. Mostly I was interested in buffing the rifle because, generally speaking, whenever games represent these things, I tend to find that it actually mirrors my limited understanding of real life, which is that a Winchester repeater carbine will allow you to murder vast untold numbers of human beings because it was just a phenomenally deadly piece of technology. And I say that with a certain degree of revulsion.
Yeah.
To its credit, Call of Juarez Gunslinger, as I say, does spend far more time than most games of its ilk ruminating on what it is to murder large quantities of human beings. Again, there's a lot of subtle balancing going on in Gunslinger that I thought was done really well. Did you get to experience any of what I would call like the gimmick set pieces?
I did two duels. They were interesting. I liked that you could just... I liked you had the option to be dishonorable and just shoot the guy. I did not do that, but I liked good that it you. Was a thing.
It's really hard, I think, conceptually, to represent a fast draw duel and make it anything other than, can you hit the button faster than the other person can?
Yeah.
Which is about good enough for like a Kirby minigame. I say this because I know there's a Kirby minigame that works exactly on that principle.
Yeah.
And honestly, I probably would have been okay if it had just been that. But instead, it's actually kind of interesting. There's your opponent on the right-hand side of the screen, and there's this very clumsy reticle that you need to keep over him.
Yep.
And it will only increase your focus when it is stationary. So it is deliberately awkward in a satisfying way. And then on the left-hand side of your screen, in my experience, just far enough away that I couldn't see both at the same time.
Yes.
You have to move your hands so that it's gradually getting closer and closer to your gun. And so I found it shockingly tense. Like, I want to look at the guy. I need to look at the guy. Wait, how's my speed doing? Oh, crap. Oh, I can't see the guy now.
Yeah.
And on top of that, there's the reaction of drawing the pistol faster than the opponent can after he moves for the gun. It's a neat little gimmick. It breaks up the fights rather nicely. There's very judiciously used quick time events called reflex fights, where you just cap a whole bunch of guys in the dome, but if you mess it up, you're then resorting to normal fighting. The only gimmick that I didn't like was there are a couple fights against somebody with a Gatling gun.
Okay.
And those just felt super awkward and unpleasant. That was the one time where I felt that they were trying to break up the normal rhythm of gameplay, and it was unsatisfying and unsuccessful.
What were those fights like?
You have to chuck dynamite at them, broadly speaking. You have to jump from cover to cover.
Yeah.
And get close enough, and then you tend to have to chuck dynamite at them. And the dynamite generally was unsatisfying. I never used dynamite if I didn't have to. It's an awful lot like how the really cool boss encounters of Senua 2, but done in a frustrating, unsatisfying way.
Okay. That's too bad.
Which is weird, because the rest of Call of Juarez Gunslinger is fast-paced, stylish, cool, arcadey, but with a little progression systems and other little sub-mechanisms. Again, just really, really well-balanced.
Yeah, Call of Juarez Gunslinger impressed me very much. I like you, I walked in, my expectations were basically on the floor, because I hadn't even had anybody recommend Kalevara's Gunslinger to me. So it was just like, okay, I don't know, it's a Western shoot people game. Okay, I've played games that are kind of like that. Let's see what we're doing. And it could have been a better experience, if not for all of the problems I had. But it was surprisingly fun, and I think I would recommend anybody, especially because it's like $3 on Steam. Okay, it might have gone, it might not be on sale anymore, but it will be on sale again, and I think it's absolutely worth picking up for a little bit of money.
I really enjoyed my 5-hour playthrough of the story mode, and then afterwards, if you really like the Twitch-based combo arcade-y system, well, there's an arcade mode. And I played one level of that. Oh, it was fast and frenetic. Not so much what I was looking for, but I did get to see on the leaderboards that a mutual friend of ours is much better at the game than I am.
Okay.
Yeah, like there's a whole combo system, and that's one area where it kind of verged on being like a stylish action game where you're supposed to rack up combos and you get huge points. I never really did that. I would have the combat encounter, catch my breath, reload. Have a combat encounter, catch my breath, reload. And that is not a way to get a great score. But it's fine. I never felt like the game was punishing me or telling me I was playing the game wrong. Mm-hmm. And then I tried the arcade mode, where the pressure is really on.
Okay, yeah, because I think part of what those combos do is the better combo you get, the more experience you get as well. So I guess you would level a little bit faster.
A little bit, yeah.
But it's nice to know that it doesn't affect you that adversely if you're, you know, if you take your time.
Echoing my position on Chrono Trigger, I never felt like I was having to grind or that I was behind the curve in terms of perk acquisition. The perks are nice, don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, you're still having to shoot people with your own reticle. There's no auto-aim system that you unlock after progressing to a certain level. So, all right, so a surprise delight, Kalevara's Gunslinger. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Caitlin, even with all your technical difficulties. I similarly came in with no expectations, and we both walked away very happy. So, it's been a solidly successful week. We now move on to shameless hyping of upcoming titles. Shout, what would you like to shout out for us?
Well, today, I'm going to shout out a game that technically actually came out today, the day we're recording. So it'll already have been out for a few days by the time anybody hears this. But I'm going to shout out the Lunar Remastered Collection. I played on PlayStation back in the day. I don't remember, honestly, what system it was on before. Was it Saturn?
I believe so.
Yeah, it was definitely Sega something. But I loved Lunar Silver Star Story. I can't remember Eternal Blue very well, but I was obsessed with Silver Star Story. I was obsessed with like all the anime style cutscenes and the characters and everything. So very, very happy to see that there's a remastered collection coming out. It's going to be good, hopefully. I don't know. I don't know. But I want it to be good.
Let's see if it holds up in your memory. I'm not even going to ask about its various qualities because I'm going to be busy with Chrono Trigger for the next little while. So I'm not in a position to start another anime-styled JRPG from roughly the same era.
Fair enough.
I, too, would like to shout out something that isn't out yet, but it will probably be out very soon, and that is Oblivion Remastered, which came out of nowhere.
Oh,
and apparently
what?
Is very, very imminent. I, for one, again, I guess I'm lapsing back into contrarian mode. I liked Skyrim fine. I thought Skyrim was pretty good, but it wasn't even one of my favorite Elder Scrolls games. And I saw Skyrim getting re-released 7,000 times.
Seriously?
In various iterations. And indeed, before I finish this sentence, it'll probably be re-released another 2 times. And all the while I'm thinking, I actually preferred Oblivion for a variety of reasons. I thought that the story was better and that it had a better sense of strangeness. I like Morrowind, I like Oblivion, because weird stuff happens. And you go to weird places where things look weird and there's weirdness. And apparently, from nowhere, we're going from 0 to 100 in 5 hot seconds. And there's word to suggest that Oblivion Remastered is coming very soon, and I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, that delights me so much, because Oblivion, okay, this is a little embarrassing to say, but all right, I played a ton of Oblivion. I never really made much progress through the main quest, and that's because going through those Oblivion gate things was scary. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I just thought it was scary.
Yeah, no, it kind of was. Things are horrifying down there.
I'm so excited to have the opportunity to play through it again you know, remastered, looking all pretty and more modern. So that, you made my day, Mark. Thank you.
Very happy to do so. And on that positive note, that is going to be it for All My Best Friends Are Digital. Thank you so much for joining us. If you would like to support our endeavors, you can find us on patreon.com/amfad. But we hope to see you again soon in either case. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, you can reach us at allmybestfriendsaredigital@gmail.com. Hope to see you again soon.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.